This podcast has been generously sponsored by Tom and Nisa Johannicks. For more information about sponsoring a podcast, email jamie@pardes.org.
Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shemot. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Shemot. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is an adjunct member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we're about to start Parshat Shemot and a new book of the Torah, the book of Exodus. And obviously, we think of that great leader, that great man who had faith in God, who did God's bidding, the man who life didn't always go in his direction, but nevertheless was able to do what he thought was the right and the good thing to do. I speak, of course, of Job. Job, you might say, Iyov, that book in Ketuvim, surely you jest. Surely you do not mean Job. Surely you speak about Moses. But very, very fascinatingly, Chazal, our sages, draw a connection between Iyov, Job, and Moshe, Moses. In the Tractate of Bava Batra in the Babylonian Talmud, on page 14b, the first source you have on your source sheet, it's speaking about who wrote the different books of the Bible. And it says, Umi Katvan, who wrote them? Moshe Katav Svaro, Uparshat Bilam Ve'Eyov. Moshe wrote his book, not clear what that is, Uparshat Bilam Ve'Eyov, and the story of Bilam, the false prophet, and Iyov, Job. Yehoshua Katav Svaro, Joshua wrote his book, Ushmona Psukim B'Shev Torah, and the last eight verses of the Torah, which took place after Moses died. I can understand them saying that Moshe wrote his book. I can understand them saying Moshe wrote the passage of Bilam. There are all different issues with Bilam, and maybe it's easier to think of Moses having written it than God having written it word for word. But Iyov, what was going on? Why did Chazal feel a need to connect Iyov and Moshe? I pondered this a little and came up with the following interesting comparison. If you look at our parasha, Shemot, if you look at the second one, it's a highly Reader's Digest version of the call of Moshe. I really just chose psukim that support the thesis that I'm trying to prove. But if you look at Shemot 4, when Moses is called, and we know he says, God, I'm not good, I can't speak. And Moses, one by one, not Moses, God, one by one, allays Moshe's fears and says, not to worry, you can do it. Eventually, it gets too much. And God says, who gave a man a mouth, replied God? Who made a person dumb or deaf? Who gives a person sight or makes it blind? Is it not I, God? God says, listen, Moses, with all due respect, and we always know that with all due respect often means the opposite. I'm God. I know what I'm doing. It's very nice that you have the critique, but I am really the boss. Now go, he says, I will be your mouth and teach you what to say. So he gives him a push. He actually gets a little annoyed at him. But then God says, don't worry, I will be your mouth. I will be with you. And then he goes a little bit further. Even he says, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? You will be able to speak to him and place the words in his mouth. I will then be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what to do. So God says, not to worry. You'll have Aaron. You'll have me. I'll be the puppeteer. And then he says, take the staff in your hand. With it, you will perform signs. And he gives him a way to convince the people by performing miracles. Very, very strangely, the famous passage towards the end of the book of Job echoed in my mind. Job, many of you will remember the story. Job is a man who has everything. And the devil says to God, well, obviously, Job is a good servant of God. Job has everything. See what happens if you take things away from him. And almost as some type of a cruel cosmic game, God takes away Job's wealth, his children, his health. And then something happens. Not clear what. Certainly Job challenges God. The Hebrew is very unclear. It's not clear whether Job rejects God or whether Job curses God or whether Job accepts God. The one pasuk we will get to later actually can mean two opposite things. The Hebrew is very, very difficult. But then God comes to Job in a whirlwind. God comes to Job in a whirlwind. And in words that sound very, very much like Shemot, then God replied to Job out of the tempest and said, "Who put wisdom in the hidden parts? Who gave understanding to the mind? Who is wise enough to give an account of the heavens?" And he goes on like this for chapters. "Have you an arm like God's? Can you thunder with a voice like his?" He says, "Do you it's very, very similar to Moses." He says, "Are you God? Did you put the world into motion? Do you know what is going on? Do you really think you puny human being is able to say to me that I'm running the world in an incorrect way? Deck yourselves with grandeur and eminence," says God. "Clothe yourself in glory and majesty." A little bit like he says to Moses, "Take now, scatter wide your raging anger. See every proud man and bring him low. See every proud man and humble him and bring them down where they stand." And interestingly, Job replies to God and he says, "I know that you can do everything, that nothing you propose is impossible for you." Job says, "God, you're right." Fascinatingly, Moses does not have the chance to respond. He just goes straight into it. Job responds. Hear now, even just reading these words, they're very, very powerful. "Hear now, and I will speak. I will ask, and you inform me. I had heard you with my ears, but now I see you with my eyes. Therefore I recant and relent, being but dust and ashes." He says, Job says, "You know, before I understood things theologically. I understood things in theory. But now I understand completely. Now I've experienced your power and your will. Now I understand." Lots of parallels with what happened with Moses. Both of them are actually people who see God in some way face to face. And both of them have very great experiences with God. Both of them are called upon God to act or to believe in a certain way. But fascinatingly, in the first one, Moses just, as I said, Moses does not have opportunity to respond. His response may be his act. His response may be writing the Torah. But he doesn't actually have the opportunity to say the words that Job does. What we're going to do today is explore three different scenarios. These scenarios were not created by me. They were not created by our sages. They were created by the students of Pardes, whom I gave this raw material to that I've given up until now. That was my class, so to speak. I've given them the raw material, and they came up, my students, with three different theories based upon when Moses wrote the book of Job. Did he write it at the time of the calling, which we just spoke about and we will look at? Did he write it after he hit the rock? Or did he write it at the end of his life? And in each case, we're going to see three very, very different things. In some cases, Moses will identify with Job. In some cases, Moses will see Job as the opposite of him. And in some cases, the book of Job will be written to round out or to flesh out something in Moses' life. So, if we look at the book of Job having been written round about the time of the psukim that I just read, that it was written at the time when Moses was called, we could see this as being written by a Moses who was angry or frustrated or felt pushed into a corner by God, but still had faith and still did what God did. But Moses gives Job the opportunity to respond. He gives him some agency, which Moses felt he lacked. Interestingly, Both of these people are humbled by God. Job is told, you know, Bubala, your questions are not as strong as you think. Moses is said, you know, you can argue as much as you like. In the end, I'm going to do it. Both of them are humbled by God. And interestingly, Moses is seen as a humble man. Moses is the greatest of the Jewish prophets. Lo kam b'Yisrael, k'moshe od, as it says in Yigdal. Never did somebody arrive. Yigdal. It says these words in the Torah. Lo kam b'Yisrael, k'moshe od. No prophet ever was created that was as great as Moses. And the medieval scholars, and even earlier, pointed out very, very cleverly, it says, Lo kam b'Yisrael, nobody came in Israel as great as Moses. But Lo b'Yisrael, not in Israel, there are prophets as great as Moses. Who are they? Job and Bilam. And fascinatingly, this is who Chazal has been written by Moses. Even if they are great or greater than Moses, Moses still has the power to write their books. It's a fascinating play that the rabbis are doing. On the one hand, they recognize that there's wisdom outside of the Jewish people. They realize that there may be prophets even greater than Moshe, but they have Moshe writing his books. And in all of these cases, we have examples of displaced speaking. In Shmot, as we mentioned, Aaron speaks for Moses. God puts the words into Moses' mouth. God puts words into both of their mouths. God puts words into Moses' mouth and he gives it to Aaron. In Bamidbar, we have displaced words as well. The animal starts speaking. Animals don't normally speak. Bilam wants to say one thing but says something else. God puts words into Bilam's mouth, but then we're told that this was written by Moshe. Again, a tishtush, what's called in Hebrew a tishtush, a blending, a shaking of who's speaking. And Job is actually very, very interesting. Job is a little different. Job, more than anybody else, is spoken to directly by God. It really is. Despite the fact that we say that it was only Moses who saw God face to face, this piece over here really gives a very, very strong impression of God speaking to Job face to face. So again, over here, we could have a working through by Moses of what happened to him, that this is a neater example. We have a neater example of a relationship between God, but nevertheless, we still have this idea of God speaking through Job. So we have both. We have a neater relationship, a more equal relationship between Job and God, but we also still have the idea of speaking through. This was something that Moses struggled with his whole life, the tension between really having a relationship with God, whereas being used by God. So if this piece was written at the beginning of Moses' calling, we have an example of people turned into a corner, but still who have faith in God. We have Job fixing up aspects of Moses' story that Moses would have liked to have been different, like agreeing to do what God said instead of feeling forced, like having a relationship that was even more direct, having the feeling or the understanding that both of them in some way were the instruments of God, and having somebody who also felt humbled. Fascinatingly, some of the students, not based on anything, by the way, suggested that it may have been after Moses touched the rock, after Moses hit the rock, rather than speaking to the rock. There's much that can be said about what Moses did wrong, and I've heard very, very beautiful ideas. But the fact of the matter is, to many of us who read the story for this to be this terrible sin. This man has taken this Jewish people from, is taking them from Egypt to the land of Israel. I know how hard it is to move Jewish people. I do it all the time in my life. Not to be able to enter the land of Israel because of this small infraction. This is a question of theodicy, of good people that bad things happen to, of great, great import. The book of Job is about theodicy. It's about why do bad things happen to good people. If ever there was a time that Moses would have to deal with this issue, it would be after striking the rock. Perhaps this is the moment where Moses stops seeing things in black and white, where he sees that life is very, very much more textured. The book of Job very powerfully makes the message that questioning does not mean loss of faith. It's possible to question. It's possible to have doubts and still to have faith. It brings up ideas that sometimes it's hard to serve God when God doesn't do what you want. This is surely something, I don't know, I say surely. One might speculate that this is what Moses was feeling at the time. Interestingly, the Malbim says that Moses wrote the book of Job to comfort Bnei Yisrael. So it could be a time not only where Am Yisrael needed comfort, Bnei Yisrael needed comfort, but also Moses. Moses, after he strikes the rock, realizes that life doesn't always work out perfectly, and that one's theology needs to be richer. And then finally, there is the theory that Moses wrote it at the end of his life. If he wrote it at the beginning of his life, he's dealing with issues of mission, responsibility, agency, control, devotion, serving. If he wrote it in the middle of his life, he may be dealing with the beginnings of doubt or questioning of faith. And finally, if Moses wrote the book of Job towards the end of his life, he may be looking back at his life and trying to understand it. It's interesting, the word Job in Hebrew is Iyov. The name Job in Hebrew is Iyov. Iyov is a passive of the word enemy or Yev. So Job is the one who is enemied against. In the context of the book of Job, this makes perfect sense. He is indeed somebody who is enemied against, who somehow God decides, I'm going to punish this person. Maybe Moses also felt enemied against. Maybe Moses also felt, hey, I could have lived this nice life with Jethro, my father-in-law that I liked, and my nice wife, looking after my sheep. I'd done my little bit in Egypt. I'd done my service. We've all, often of us, have felt like this. We did our bit. We were idealistic. We made some changes in society. Now, come on, for goodness sake, let me go back and have a good time. And Moses could have felt enemied against, instead of just being able to enjoy his retirement after, you know, doing his moment of resistance in Egypt. He has to take the whole Am Yisrael and their fate on. Maybe there's a hint of protest. As I said, the famous lines that Job said, though he slay me, I remain faithful, can be interpreted linguistically in many, many ways. Maybe Moses, looking back, has a moment of doubt. One student suggested that Job is Moses old, and both of them are righteous people who suffered in different ways, but nevertheless righteous people who suffers. But perhaps more than anything else, and we mentioned this in the previous scenario as well, in many, many ways, the book of Job undercuts the theology of the Torah. The Torah is very, very much, and I realize I myself am being simplistic, But the Torah itself is very, very much, if you do God's will, you'll have rain in your season. The world will work out well. And Job is, that could be true, that could be nice, but there are lots of other things that happen on the way. It sure doesn't seem like that sometime. So we see in a very, very powerful way that Moses could have written the book of Job for lots of different reasons. For comfort, for inspiration, as a commentary on his own life, as a way to make sense of what had happened to him, as inspiration. This is the beauty of writing. This is the beauty of reading. And this is the beauty of learning. We have only one life to live, all of us. But the beauty of reading, the beauty of learning, the beauty of writing, the beauty of art, the beauty of music, is it allows us to live other lives. It allows us to be part of other realities. I think what this Dvar Torah today, what this podcast today challenges me, is to ask myself, what am I reading? What am I writing? What am I learning? In what way is it a commentary on my life? In what way is it helping on my life? In what way is it taking me that great step further? Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levikus. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.